Hi, and welcome to The Right Side with me, Andrea Ruth, and Kimberly Ross. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you, Andrea?
I'm great. So you are heading off to, we're recording this early this week, you're heading off to, what are you heading off to again? Pro-Life Summit?
I'm going to the Pro-Life Women's Conference. It's the third annual, and I went last year for my first time to the one in Orlando, and this year the one is in St. Louis, so I'm heading to that tomorrow.
That's awesome. Of course, it's women, so it's non-inclusive.
Yes, I love it. It's wonderful.
So this week we have on with us salon-approved, elitist conservative, Coke Soros monster, Jay Caruso. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, ladies?
We're great.
Doing pretty well.
He's all right.
Also of the Dallas Morning News. And I think
Fancy journalist.
Yes. I think you're kind of missing podcasting because the Fifth Estate's on hiatus right now. I kind of sense this like, oh my gosh, I'm back doing this again. I miss this. Is that what I'm feeling here? No?
No. It's kind of like, damn it, I got to get ready now and get on the air.
Yeah, but you get to do it in like no makeup, right, Kim? We get to do it in no makeup, pajamas.
Right. Well, thanks for coming. I'm so glad you're so excited for this, Jay.
I'm thrilled.
You should be, because we're doing your topic. Kim and I decided, we're going to have to do something on immigration, because immigration has just, like, taken over the news cycle for, like, a week and a half now, which has been really annoying. But, Jay, you've also been, you know, on this, not so much, you know, it's like, we don't want to focus on immigration policy, because do any of us really, like, know, are in the weeds about immigration policy? I don't think any of us have like, you know, we're not immigration attorneys. We're not, you know, the closest I ever got to immigration law was, you know, for 6 years I was, you know, dating a guy who was South African who was trying to immigrate legally, you know. So it's like I had to go sit at him with in offices waiting for him to get his, you know, permanent residency card. But Jay, we wanted to have you on because you've been pretty, you know, vocal about the politics of immigration and just what that's all meant that in the past week and a half. I mean, we've really seen Democrats and Republicans, you know, seemingly, except for politicians, but Democrats and Republicans, conservatives and progressives coming together on this issue of, look, we don't think that kids should be taken away from their parents. But what do you do with that? And so we've kind of entered into this weird kind of, I don't know, purgatory. It does seem like purgatory, does it not?
It does, yes.
Of what are we doing with illegal illegal crossings, who belongs to whom at the border, whether or not they're trafficked or children. But Jay, where did this like all spring up in the last 10 days? I know you have like, you know, some thoughts and you know the politics of how this all came about. So do you just want to kind of like give a background and just kind of where this all came from? Why it's all of a sudden in the forefront of our, you know, collective consciousness as far as cable news goes?
Well, if you listen to some people, it's nothing but a big scam. But, you know, those people aren't very smart. You know, this is just the culmination of another situation where Donald Trump got the public sentiment completely wrong because he was listening to that little creep, Stephen Miller, who somehow believes that, you know, doing something like this is actually something that people support. Now, you know, you can sit there and you can talk all you want about how Obama had kids in cages and all this kind of stuff was going on before Trump did it. And all that is true. But it doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is that they implemented a stricter policy, whereas before the policy was if families crossed the border, border agents they were given the discretion to sit there and say, okay, you know what, with this person, you know, they're doing something here, you know, maybe trafficking or something else where they would be immediately arrested, held. Others would come across the border and they would, you know, since it was the first time if somebody was engaging in legal entry, you know, it's a misdemeanor. They would actually write them kind of like a summons and say you need to appear in federal court on such and such a date. Now, that was often referred to as catch and release because, you know, basically chances are these people may not show up for their court appearance, you know. the majority of the people who are caught at the border in this kind of situation, and there was the last time there was a big wave was 2014, are not from Mexico. They're from Central America. I've been looking at the numbers on this. They're mostly from El Salvador and Honduras and Guatemala, places like that. And they're, you know, whether or not they have legitimate, asylum requests versus them just trying to get here is another story altogether. The point is the overall thing is that this is just another incident where Trump and the people around him just completely miscalculated what the reaction would be. I don't think that there's anything that he has done where Republicans, and you just said it wasn't necessarily politicians, but it was, and politicians jumped on this as well, where Republican and Democratic politicians basically said, you got to stop doing this. I mean, even people like Ted Cruz, whose solution was kind of like ridiculous, still knew that, you know, the politics of this was not good. The Wall Street Journal said, hey, you guys want to lose your House majority, then keep up with this. When you have people that are defending the policy out there explaining, you know, how it is, if you're explaining, you're losing. You know, that's basically how it is. And there's just no way around it. So it was just another disaster. And I was reading today, you know, even though Trump signed the executive order saying that families wouldn't be separated, but they'd be held indefinitely, the order was sent down to Border Patrol agents that, once again, they had the discretion to choose whether or not to hold the families or to let them go. Basically, they've returned back to what the policy was. Now, the Department of Justice is saying, no. The zero tolerance is still in place. It's still in place. Everyone's insisting zero tolerance is still in place, but apparently they found information that said Border Patrol agents have once again given the discretion to determine whether or not the family should be detained or whether or not they can cite them and let them go. So basically that's, they're saying that they've returned to the same policy that they had before. And, you know, guys like Stephen Miller who foolishly think that this is a policy that had, you know, like 90 to 10 approval. It didn't even find approval among Texans, not even Republicans. There was a poll that came out that it had 46%. They couldn't even get a majority that supported the president's policy, even though Republicans rate immigration and border security as two of the most important issues facing Texas. So they couldn't even find a clear majority to support this policy. And of course, you know, Democrats were just opposed at like, 85%, and then independents nearly 60% were opposed. So it was just another instance where they implemented a policy that played to this narrow base of supporters, this kind of like 30%, mm-hmm. pretending that they thinking that it was going to be something that would be embraced by a majority, and it failed, and they had to look for a way out, and they finally got it, and then, you know, we'll kind of this has been issue number one for the media for the last week, and I do want to call out people in the media, stop crying on air. Now, I don't care if you're a commentator, you're a journalist, you know, be a professional, you know, assess the situation, criticize if you must. But like Rachel Maddow and others and Mika Brzezinski and others who were sitting there and like breaking up and starting to get close to tears, you know, it's like, stop, you know, you do your job. You know, this is not something that, you know, it happens all of a sudden where somebody can be overcome with emotion. This is just playing for the camera as far as I'm concerned.
And they weren't tearing up in 2014 when the same reports were being made about the same exact children. In fact, the images from 2014 are being used today to say, oh, look at these children. Now, I will say, as you know, Jay, you talking about how, you know, Border Patrolmen are getting the discretion, which is something that happens often. I live less than a mile from the Canadian border. I know, completely different, but still, same things go on. Border Patrol agents, and I'm the niece of a 30-year veteran of, and he's still with Customs and Border Enforcement, but he was Border Patrol in El Paso on the Juarez El Paso border for 20 years. As a niece of someone who has been on that, the discretion of the border agent is very important, especially when you're dealing with something that happens to deal with trafficking, things like that. Like that's one of the things that keeps on getting repeated over and over again. Like so many of these children are being brought across, being told that they're a relative will be across the border when actually they're just being brought into the hands of a trafficker. Look, that is the go-to at this point Fox News narrative. I've heard it over and over again. I don't watch Fox News, but I get to hear it often enough. It is one of those things where it's like you do have to deal with the imagery and the idea that these kids are being handed over by their parents, thinking that they're going to get a better life in America, but they're actually being sent to sex traffickers or traffickers for whatever reasons, work traffickers, sex traffickers. But Kim, you brought up a really good point in both your Washington Examiner piece and a piece on Red State, in that this is an issue that Congress has really dropped the ball on. I mean, this isn't something that border patrolmen should, yes, have the discretion, but they shouldn't be dealing with this amount of crossing at the border in the first place, because Congress should have this handled from an administrative point of view and a legislative point of view.
Yeah, definitely. There was a really good article in National Review that I quoted in my Red State article. And my Red State article, because we like this phrase right now, my title for my Red State piece was "The Child Separation Crisis is the Latest Byproduct of a Feckless Congress." So, we like that word, feckless. The feckless C word, the feckless Congress. So I used that in my title. But no, I quoted the National Review piece by Rich Lowry, and it's an excellent piece. And this was actually a piece he wrote at the end of May. And it's not like we've been talking about. It's not like this issue hasn't been going on for a while. It's not as if it suddenly started when, like a few months ago or when, Trump came into office. This is something that happened during the Obama administration. But of course, the media we have right now is not going to focus on any negatives, that were in the previous administration when they happened or even now. So all they can do is talk about the current administration and whatever may be a leftover from the previous president, they're going to put on top of the current president. And I had some discussions this week on social media when people would say, "Well, it's not he didn't come up with this. It was in place, before he went to office." And Jay, as you were saying, that doesn't matter. It's here right now, and it either needs to be dealt with, or if it's not going to be dealt with, it's going to be put on his shoulders, whether the MAGA crowd loves it or not. Or whatever, it's going to be something that's, the blame is going to be on him. So this Rich Lowry piece, he was saying that there's different, ways that Congress can take care of it. One, as we, all know, they need to take care of the Flores Consent Decree, which was established in 1997. And it has limits for the time children can be detained. He said that's something that they definitely need to address. And in President Trump's executive order, he was instructing Jeff Sessions to, focus on that decree and, see if he can get that taken care of in the courts and stuff. But also, this is a section I put in my piece. Rich Lowry says, "Congress can fix this. Congress can change the rules so the Flores Consent Decree will no longer apply, and it can appropriate more money for family shelters at the border. This is an obvious thing to do that would eliminate the tension between enforcing our laws and keeping family units together." And it's been pretty frustrating given the kind of the binary mindset that everyone still has, right now after the 2016 elections kind of carried over into, present day. But everyone, if you're talking about, "Well, I really think these family units should be, still be together. Obviously, we don't want children to be in the hands of sex traffickers, but families, that are actually related and everything, they should be kept together." And it's almost the moment you say that, people are like, "Well, you're for open borders." No, I didn't say that. It's not one or the other. I personally think that we can keep families together. There's going to have to be some changes made, but we can keep families together, but also be serious about our national security. And I think it's obviously, important that we do both. And in the Washington Examiner piece I did today, the title was Crimes Against the Innocent, Abortion and Border Family Separation. And in there I was, you know, just talking about, I mentioned Rachel Maddow, she was crying on the air, and other just media roundtables we've seen on different, you know, channels, you know, how people are saying, you know, Trump is, you know, this and that and everything. And while I don't agree with the family separation thing, of course it's something that he could address, and he did this week, though we need, you know, Congress to do a little bit more. But I included in my article, I'm not sure if everyone saw this, but on Wednesday, John Lewis, you know, representative from Georgia, Democrat, of course, he was talking, you know, on the floor of the House, and he said this quote, and it just, this is what spurred me to write this article about the crimes against the innocent. He said, quote, "Our nation is mourning. Our nation is crying out to save our little children, save our babies. History will not be kind to us as a nation and as a people if we continue to go down this road. We must stop the madness and stop it now," end quote. Now, I understand addressing a part of the enforcement that separates families, but our nation is not in mourning, okay? And if he would be asked to use the same description to describe our nation when it comes to abortion, he would absolutely not use it. And it would be more appropriate to use it for something like that. And that is, you know, kind of what my piece is about. I said at the very end, let me scroll there. I said, as a pro-life advocate, I'm bothered by the flippant attitude towards the young lives who enter this country illegally. They should be kept with their families and given proper protection, etc. But then I said, as an advocate for all, I'm horrified that a nation so eager to welcome some into the country actively works to keep millions from experiencing life in the first place. So while I'm bothered by the current situation that needs to be addressed more than it is, you know, right now, it's a glaring hypocrisy, you know, that the left is going off on a tangent about how cruel Trump is to children, when first, it's something that's been in place for a while, and second, they would not even shed a tear over the fact that innocent lives are taken by abortion each day. So it's a very frustrating time to even talk about this issue. I hate bringing it up on social media anymore, because you just get like hammered by both sides. It's so annoying.
Oh, I know. I refrain from sending you all of my hate tweets because I get so few of them that I'm just like, she doesn't need to see mine too.
But to mute everything the last few days.
Oh, you get some good quality mute sometimes. You definitely do. I always think like, I'm always like, whenever I tweet something like mildly controversial and I get a ton of, and I was like, wow, I'm really getting some like quality mutes in here. Like, I'm glad I'm like getting this out of the way. But, you know, the Babylon Bee had an actually great, you know, tweet article thing. I mean, they're a satirical site, but they had a thing after last week with President Trump meeting with Kim Jong-un. They had a article entitled something like U.S. President or Korean President meets with President of country that's murdered 60 million, you know, or 600 million or something like that. And he was talking about President Trump and America and the number of babies we've aborted since the passage of Roe versus Wade. But Jay, if we want to, sorry, does anybody want to, no laughs. But Jay, if we want to talk about moving goalposts, the fact that a actual bill was presented and Chuck Schumer actually and the Democrats actually came out and said, no, we're not doing this. It was the most, is there anything more blatant than moving the goalposts and saying, and by moving the goalposts, I mean by saying that when Donald Trump signed the executive order, they said, oh, well, even though he's done that, there's plenty of, I saw a ton of articles that said there's plenty of families that now that they've been separated, there's no clear passage to them being reunified. And at the same time, Democrats like Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi saying, no, we're not going to pass anything that the Republicans come up with. Yeah, Ted Cruz and whoever may have come up with a bill, but we're not going to go for it because, and here's the underlying read between the lines text, we need this for the midterms.
Well, I mean, you know, the thing is that they didn't even need it for the midterms. You know, it's already done enough damage. But yeah, I mean, that's typical. I mean, they didn't even have to pass Ted Cruz's bill. There were other bills that were, you know, a much broader yeah, Ted Cruz's was very narrow in scope, and it was kind of ridiculous. It
but
was
the
like,
Democrat
oh,
bill was ridiculous too. Absolutely.
Well, but I know, but we're talking about the Republicans and yeah. their reaction to it. And Ted Cruz's bill was something like, oh, if the people, the families can prove within 14 days that they're escaping something, it's like how in the world is some couple that ran away from you know, I ran away from Guatemala going to get word back to them, back to Guatemala. Where do they mail it? I mean, his bill was ridiculous.
I don't see that's possible.
Yeah, but there were other compromise bills that were just as good. And Chuck Schumer comes out, oh, no. We, the president, you know, the president could stop this in with a stroke of his pen, and now they're feeling the heat. Well, the whole point of putting together legislation to put an end to it is because the president wasn't going to stop it. Apparently, when he finally decided to sign the executive order, the word is that it was pressure from Ivanka and Melania that, you know, he finally decided to do it. You know, and I don't know if that's true or not, but something obviously, yeah. I mean, he had just said days earlier an executive order isn't going to work. Well, then he turns around and does an executive order. But Democrats, of course, you know, they're going to play politics with this. And Chuck Schumer is, you know. Harry Reid was just a scumbag, you know, person. Schumer is the kind of guy that'll, you know, smile when he puts his arm around you and sticks a knife in your back. There's the difference there. You know, he's from New York, so he's a little bit more shrewd with his nonsense. And so, you know, yeah, of course it was a garbage thing. You know, it was, they wanted to maintain this, and he even admitted it when he said, Republicans are feeling the heat. Well, of course they're feeling the heat. You know, the policy is kind of creating this mess. You know, but to turn around, sit there and say, well, we're not going to do this because, you know, the president could change it. Well, the whole point of discussing legislation is because they figured he wasn't going to change. I mean, come on, you know, put two and two together, Charles.
As far as legislation goes, anything that the Republicans present is going to have, you know, an aspect of the child separation, that ending, but also a requiring funding for the border wall, correct? And anything the Democrats propose is not going to include funding for a border wall. So nothing's going to change, really. Nothing's going to pass. Nothing's going to happen.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's nothing there. There's no way there. You know, I think it was Matthias Shapiro was talking about, hey, why don't the Democrats, sit there and give in on the border wall? Let them give Trump $25 billion for the border wall and then you can get everything else. And of course, Democrats are just holding the line on that. I actually think that it's true. Give up on it. Who cares? It's not going to get built the way Trump wants it to get built. Mm-hmm. They're still running into all kinds of trouble getting land down in Texas. They're going through different ways of trying to grab land from private owners. He would be long gone even if he lasted two terms before anything really got started with that wall. It's kind of like the way when Bush got a whole bunch of $8 billion or something for the border wall, and you know, I think they got like 100 miles or something. Built in that time, so it's like, you know, give it up and let him do it and let him have his moment. But I mean, yeah, we're at that point in, you know, the political world where it's like any give and take is just, you know, and it, I don't know if it's necessarily, you know, they're concerned about the far left in their party the way Republicans are concerned about the Trump faction in the Republican Party. You know, Arthur Brooks, American Enterprise Institute, said it succinctly. He said, we're being governed by the extremists in both sides of the party, in both parties. We're being governed by the extremes. They're the ones with the loudest voices, so they're the ones getting their way, when those of us kind of, you know, who are more towards the middle, still on the right or left, are kind of left out in that.
And like we've seen, you can be a loud voice on Twitter, not make any kind of economic impact on a company or organization or institute. But if you have enough clout on Twitter, you can get people to fold, which is really kind of sick in a way, because they haven't shown any kind of economic reality when it comes to, you know, going out against certain companies. I don't think I've ever seen one company or entity or personality, you know, unless they've done something personally very bad, I've never seen someone for an idea or an ideology or you know, quote unquote supporting, you know, it's like how people always say Chick-fil-A quote unquote supports, you know, suppression of gays and or hate against gays. I've never seen any company actually suffer any actual economic or real world consequences when we're talking about things that happen online and in on Twitter or Facebook or anywhere else. When it comes to that, I had a question for Jay and I. Oh, Jay, I was going to ask. So what do you see as the solution for this, if there's any? Or do we just see this continuing to, I mean, I know you're going to sit there and say like, oh, Andrew, you're so cynical. You're saying that every, you know, both parties need this for midterms and for 2020. So, you know, but like I see no one actually budging on this issue because both of them want it for their own purposes, for election reasons. Do you think there's any real movement or any real resolution to this issue? I mean, this is a big issue.
Now, as long as both parties are ruled by the extremes, the loudest voices, both on the left and the right, nothing will get done. And, you know, probably 10 years ago was the best chance that they had to get something done. They couldn't even do it then. Certainly not going to do it with Trump in office. Trump has made, you know, if there are two things that Trump has stuck to without fail and has refused to waver since he is taking office, it is the immigration issue, and it has been, tariffs and trade. Those two issues, he is holding firm to his position, and he's not going to back off on that. He throws out these teasers about DACA, and it kills me that he implements certain policies and certain things, and then turns around and tries to blame Democrats for it. It doesn't really work. He should just kind of, that's the whole thing. If he agrees with the policy and he says it's his and everything is good, well then why blame Democrats for it, Mr. President? You know, just kind of own it. But it's not something he's going to waver on, even if, you know, we're not talking about just politics, we're talking about practical stuff here. It doesn't matter. Because the forces on the left are never going to allow Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi to give Trump funding for his border wall. And then the forces on the right are just going to start yelling amnesty the moment something happens. I mean, we're at a point now where the new executive order that he signed and the bills that are working their way through, we just saw it before where there's House conservatives who are waiting for President Trump to sit there and say, what we're doing is not amnesty, so that they can go ahead and they can support it. I mean, that's where we're at now. If you're not indefinitely detaining families that have crossed the border, it's amnesty. So yeah, that's the kind of thingness that we've reached.
Yeah. Kim, any thoughts or anything to add on that issue? Do you think there's any like answer forthcoming, like that means anything?
Oh well, as you guys have both kind of said, as long as we're in the midst of this very kind of extreme era where everything is blown out of proportion and everything Trump says is, you know, he's Hitler, and everything the left does is they're, you know, crying on television and everything, I don't think any sort of practical, common sense, logical solution where both sides give a little bit to see us, you know, a solution come up, I don't think that's going to happen at all as long as Trump is in the White House. I mean, that's just how everything is. Everything is ramped up to the highest volume no matter what happens. Even if it's not something that anyone needs to freak out about, it's still, you know, in the news cycle constantly, and that's all people think of when they think of Trump or the GOP or something. And kind of an offshoot of that, this is obviously not a big deal, but it's a big deal in the left, you know, media right now, is Melania's coat today when she went to visit the children's shelter in Texas. Now, she changed when she, I guess, was on the plane and then was coming when they landed in Texas, and she got off the plane and was meeting at the actual shelter. She had changed by then. But when she was getting on the plane, I believe that's when it happened. But she was wearing a green coat. I don't know even like the brand. I'm sure it's like $5,000 or something that I would never buy. But there was this writing on the back, and it said, I really don't care, do you? And it's obviously not something she put on there. It was made by the designer. But is, I mean, what do you guys think of this? Is obviously a bad fashion move to do, you know, to Why wear this when you're going to visit children. And if she didn't know that she was wearing something like this, or someone didn't tell her, then I'm sorry, they're not very, you know, observant. And if she did, and Trump tweeted not too long ago that she was doing it as like a, like, you know, flipping off the media and everything. If she did it to do that, it doesn't really look good considering what she's going, you know, to.
It's not, you know, really very Melania-esque though either. Like, she isn't.
It's kind of edgy.
I think that she. Like, I would assume that she just didn't know what it said, and she needs better designers, because no way Laura Bush or Michelle Obama had designers that ever let them walk off a plane with something like that on their back. Now, bringing up Obama, I think that, you know, we also, on the reverse side, like you brought up, you know, that things were going to 11 on, you know, with the left as far as Trump goes. I think that that's kind of in response to, for, you know, at least since, you know, the passage of the ACA in 2010, of Republicans kind of going to 11. And you know, it's like and people like Glenn Beck and things like that admitting, like, look, we kind of like, you know, talk about a crier, right? Like, oh, Rachel Maddow suddenly crying. You know who was the big crier before Rachel Maddow? Glenn Beck, you know, and admitting that he's the problem, that he was a problem, and he's one of the people that led to all of this, you know, and just that there were people, you know, 2 to 3 years ago who saw the left as, on the right, who saw the left as just as detrimental to the country. But Jay, I know you said this before, like, look, America lives through presidencies. We just do. And we're bigger than presidencies, and the fact that our presidencies don't, you know, there are definite systemic problems that I think that the country is going to be, you know, I hate to, you know, quote Jeremiah Wright, but the chickens are going to be coming home to roost, especially on a systemic level, at least in the next, like, and it won't be fast. It'll be like 50-100 years from now. I mean, we've been dealing with progressivism for 100 years, and we're only dealing with the real fruition of that in the last 100 years. But we need to wrap this up. But I want to say to both of you, tonight, it's June 21st. It's the first day of summer. And a great conservative mind has passed away today. Charles Krauthammer has passed away. I know that for me, like, I saw him for a lot on Fox News back when I used to watch it, especially after my accident. I always felt so blessed that my accident, as even though I lost two limbs, I did not have any spinal cord injury, whereas Charles Krauthammer, you know, took a dive into a pool, has all of his limbs, and was far more disabled than I have ever been, even though I lost two limbs. But he went on and he lived his life. So, Kim and Jay, I just wanted to, like, if you guys want to say anything about losing this great conservative mind tonight, if you wanted to say anything, Jay, do you want have anything you want to, like, a memory or a accolade that you want to give to Charles Krauthammer?
No, it's just that Charles was one of the foremost intelligent conservatives, you know, commentators on the scene. And he was also one that was very blunt. You know, he was one that did not hold back. He didn't care what party a person was from. If he thought that they were doing something wrong, he was going to criticize them. Of course, that's, you know, he did that against Donald Trump. And of course, that turned him into enemy number one among the Trumpistas, who were calling him a cuck and calling him a loser and all this other kind of stuff, following in the footsteps of the Cheeto Jesus in mocking him and everything like that. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, and I said this, you know, several weeks ago on Twitter, I said his legacy is going to endure. The charlatans who are out there right now, who have, like, seen, you know, who have had some short-term success, nobody's going to remember them in 20 years. People will remember Charles Krauthammer 20 years from now and beyond, when people are going to talk about who were the great conservative thinkers of the 20th century and into the 21st century. Charles Krauthammer his name will be in that discussion. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be missed.
Yeah, I'm with Jay on that. I really loved his constancy, and I remember him from, like you were talking about, Andrea, from Fox News, when I used to watch that, you know, constantly, several years ago. But I really, like you said, Jay, I loved his bluntness, and he was brilliant, and he, you know, said what needed to be said, even if it was maybe a little bit uncomfortable. And it was only a few weeks ago, and I'm sure everyone's aware of the letter that, you know, he sort of gave to the media and everything. It was actually on June 8th, I believe. He essentially said that he only had a few weeks left to live. And the letter, you know, wasn't very long, but I just appreciated how he kind of, for lack of a better term, he exited this life. At the very end of the letter, he said, "I leave with this life with no regrets. It was a wonderful life, full and complete with the great loves and great endeavors that make it worth living. I'm sad to leave, but I leave with the knowledge that I live the life that I intended." And I thought that was such a graceful, you know, thankful way to basically say goodbye. And he'll be missed for, obviously, for the conservative commentator he was, but also the person he was.
Yep. I agree. I remember being in ninth grade, and my ninth grade English teacher had a quote. I don't even remember what the quote was, but it said something about aging gracefully. And it was just like, that's exactly like what Charles Krauthammer said was perfect. Like, you know, like, no one's happy. I mean, there's certain people who probably like didn't live such a happy life that are ready to go, or they've lived, you know, like my great uncle's mother's 105 and she's like, "I'm ready to go." But when you're only 68, it's like, you're not quite ready to leave yet. And so, but aging gracefully and dying gracefully are two different things. And it's just, it was so heartwarming to read that letter a couple, you know, not even 2 weeks ago. He, you know, precipitated us all. So, so rest in peace, Charles Krauthammer, and we will see you on another episode of The Right Side. Jay Crusoe, thank you for joining us. Where can everybody reach you?
Thank you.
You can find me on Twitter at jcaruso.com and, of course, at thedallasnews.com.
All righty. And Kim, where can everybody find you?
Of course, on Twitter at Southern Keeks, KEEKS, and Red State and Washington Examiner.
And I'll definitely be hounding you for a good pro-life women's conference roundup when you get back. Mm-hmm. So,
for sure. All
righty. And you can find me at Andrea and Ruth on Twitter. And we'll see you next time on The Right Side next week.